Well, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is Perek Mem Vav of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter 46 of the book of Yechezkel. It is, in Haftarot and in themes, a continuation of the previous chapter, the end of the previous chapter, because the Haftarah for Parashat HaChodesh, with the Haftarah that we read just before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, ends at Pasuk Yud Chet of this Haftarah. So, as we read it, we're going to also want to try to follow and figure out and understand what it is about this haftar, about these psukim, about this nevuah, that makes it apt for that date. We're looking for something over and above the fact that it happened on that date, as we noted before. So it's sort of Komar Hashem Elokim, Shaar Hechatzer HaPanimim Tapone Kadim, Yesagur Sheshi Imeh Maaseh V'Yom HaShabbat Yipateach V'Yom HaChodesh Yipateach. So there's an eastern gate. It's a gate for the inner court, meaning for the what we call the Azara. The outer court is what we call the Azrat Nashim, the place where all of the Jews could gather. So the gate to this inner Heichal, to this inner court, to this inner Chatzer, to this inner court, we're told, is going to be closed for 6 days of the week. It'll be open on Shabbos, and it will be open on Chodesh. So this is a place where the Radak mentioned something, says explicitly something that I've mentioned before, which is the understanding or the assumption that in this future Beit HaMikdash, there will be somewhat less attendance or less focus than we might have imagined. So the Radak says that the reason why this gate will be closed on the regular weeks is that not that many people will be coming to the Beit HaMikdash on these days. We're going to see that the Nasi is different. We'll see that in a second. But that on these days, not that many people will be coming. When they would come on Shabbat, and they would come on Chodesh. So Chodesh is an interesting time to pick or to see, because, so he says, Shar Azra Azot HaMizrachi Shehu Patuach Azrat Yisrael Yesegur Sheshim Yemaseh She'ein Ba'im Ha'an LeBeit HaMikdash. People won't be coming. Ela B'Shabbatot V'Chodeshim. And that'll be open, and that'll be also, he says, Gamze Yechidush La'atid. So the Radak is noting and saying straight out that we will have a different relationship to the Beit HaMikdash in the future that we did in the past. So if in the past there was too much of a focus on Korbanot, and we've seen that not only was too much of a focus on Korbanot, but there was too much of a focus on those kinds of Avodah to whatever God, because there was also a lot of Avodah Zarah, so it wasn't just that they were too from in a particular way, it was also that aside from being focused on that form of religiosity, they also were keeping other religions, which is a problem in terms of this religion. So aside from all that, or in because of all that, in the future, when we get a Beit HaMikdash back, and I think there are probably many Jews out there who think we want a Beit HaMikdash, and that's going to become so much the focus of all that we do, because we'll be so excited because we haven't had a Beit HaMikdash in so long, and we'll be so thrilled to have a Beit HaMikdash, etc., etc. So here you see the Navi saying very clearly that in that future Beit HaMikdash, people won't come that much. They'll come on Shabbos, they'll come on Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is an interesting holiday in the Nevi'im, because the Nevi'im take it seriously, and as the Rav pointed out in some of his writings, we don't have a lot to apply to the Chodesh. So here, the Chodesh seems to be a day that regularly, aside from Shabbat, you'll make a special trip to the Beit HaMikdash to visit and to see what's going on there. So this door will be generally closed because it doesn't need to be open because people aren't coming. So the Nasi will come from a different gate by the Ulam Hasha'ar, by the there's a special entranceway, a vestibule outside the gate, and he'll stand there. And they'll do his korbanot v'shtachava al miftan hashar v'yatza, and he'll bow down there. In other words, you won't even have to go in all the way. He'll bow down there, and he'll go out v'hashar liyisager an ha'arev, and then the gate won't close until evening. So this seems to be a description of, when we say that the gate won't close until evening, that seems to be a description of Shabbat and Moed, right? Which is how the Radak understands it. Even though he goes out and he leaves and he's bowed down, it won't close. And then when people come, they'll bow down there, which is going to be near the Shaar Heichal, right? And this is Pasuk Gimel, V'hishtachavu ha'ma'aretz petach sharehu b'shabbatot v'chodashim k'nei Hashem. They will stand there in the gate to the outer courtyard, to the Azara, and they will bow down before Hashem. So there seems to be even a limitation on how far they're going to be coming in. It's not going to be this very familiar, it's not going to be that they're going to come in fully and just do what they want there and mill about and hang out and have a good time. They're going to have a reverent experience there, and they're going to have an infrequent reverent experience there. I would just note in the continuing consideration of Rashi versus the Radak, in terms of the Nasi being Kohen Gadol, the Nasi being or the Nasi being Melech HaMashiach. So here, the easiest way I think to read these psukim is that the Nasi is somebody who is not a Kohen, right? Because he comes in, he stands at the doorway, and he waits, and he this. So it would seem to be the easiest way to read it would be that he's not a Kohen, and that would suggest or support the Radak's reading that he is in fact Melech HaMashiach. So Pasuk Dalet v'ha'ula sheyakriv ha'nasi la'Hashem b'yom ha'Shabbat shishach vasim tamimim v'ayal tamim. He'll offer six sheep and a goat mincha ifa la'ayal v'kvasim mincha matat yado v'shemin hin la'ifa, and he'll give minachot, he'll give flour offerings to accompany them, and he'll give oil offerings to accompany them v'yom ha'chodesh parim v'kar tamimim v'sheshi kvasim v'ayal tamimim yu, and on Rosh Chodesh he'll give a bull and six kvasim in an aisle, ve'ifal lapar ve'ifal la'ayel yaseh mincha, and then the menachot ve'lakvasim kasher tasigado, as much as he can afford v'shemin hin la'ifa, and then he'll give oil one hin for every eifa. So problem with these korbanot is that they also don't appear in the Torah that we know of. In terms of defined korbanot, this is another example where the Radak is a chidush, and where there are ways in which you can try to make it jive with what we know of already. He'll go out the same way he came in. I mentioned that briefly in the previous chapter, that he gets to go out the same way he came in rather than going all the way through, but in Pasuk Tet and Yod we'll see. When they come on the holidays, whoever comes in the northern gate to bow down, has to walk all the way through and go out the southern gate. And the reverse is true as well. You have to go out the opposite way of how you came in. And on the Chagim and Moadim, the mincha, the flower offerings are an eifa for every par, an eifa for every aisle, and as much as you can give, you can afford for the kvasim, and then one hin of oil for every eifa. So this idea of walking through, as opposed to turning around the way you came. So we mentioned it briefly yesterday in previous perek, but I want to just spend one more second on it to note that what it's saying is, I think it's giving an impression of what it means to visit in Beit Hashem. It's not that you show up there and you appear, and the appearance is the experience of God. It's the walking through that seems to be the experience of experiencing God. And therefore that's what is required of the regular Jews. It's not that they come in, they watch, they see what's happening, and then they leave, they hang out. What they're being told is, they have to make themselves experience. They have to go all the way through, going out a different gate than they came in, which is, I think, just a way of ensuring that they actually enter and be fully part of. Meaning, if you're going to go out the way you came in, even if you go all the way in, you can go in and then just stay in a little bit and not fully thrust yourself into what's going on or become a part of what's going on. And what I think we're being told is that no, that when they come, and remember, they're only coming Shabbat, Moed, Shabbat, Chodesh, and Moed, on Shabbos and on Rosh Chodesh and on the various holidays. But when they come, then they have to really come. They have to really put themselves into it. And therefore, the way that we show them they have to put themselves into it is they have to make their way all the way through the Azara, all the way through the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. They can't just walk in and walk out. So the Nasi is different, in that he has a more continuing relationship to the Beit HaMikdash. He comes more regularly, right? We notice that even though that shahr is closed, that gate is closed during the week when the people aren't coming, he would be coming more regularly, and in coming more regularly, he therefore doesn't have to make that point because of that regularity relationship. So that when you have a regular, you're showing up, you're being there, you're this, that gives you certain rights or certain experiences, but when you're coming more infrequently, it's not a problem to come infrequently, but in the coming infrequently, in the coming not so regularly, you have to then make your coming all that much more deep of an experience and fulfilling of an experience. Pasuk Yud Bet, V'chi Yaseh, Hanasi Nidava Ola Ushlamim. נדבר להשם, ופתח לו את השער הפונה קדים, ועשה את הולטובת של המאו כאשר יעשה ביום השבת, ויצא וסגר את השער אחרי ציטו. So when he makes a nidava during the week, and comes to make an offering, whatever kind, an ola or a shlamim, so then they open up that shar for him, his special shar that we spoke about before, and he comes in like he would on a Shabbos, but then he gets to leave and they close the gate right after him. You make a keves every day in the morning. This is similar to what we have in our korbanot. So here on the daily one, you don't have as much of a mincha. You don't have an eifa. You have a sixth of an eifa for the keves. You don't have a full hin for every eifa. You have a third of a hin. La ros etas, so let to make it moist, the flour. Mincha l'Hashem chukat olam tamid. This will be the mincha, the flower offering you give to Hashem, and this will be the law forever. Ya'asu et ha-keves ve'et ha-mincha ve'et ha-shemen v'boker olat tamid. They will do the keves and the mincha and the oil every morning as an olat tamid, as a permanent offering. Pasuk Ted Zayin, Komar Hashem Elokim, Ki tein ha-nasim matana li'ish mi banav, nachalato hi levanav tiyeh achuzato hi achuzatam hi banachalau. So when the melech, when the Nasi, I'm sorry, Rashi would seem to still think it's going out a little bit hard, but let's just, so whoever it is, when the Nasi gives a gift to one of his sons, that will become his Nachala, and that'll be theirs forever, and that's not as surprising as you would think, because after all, these sons are going to one day inherit him. So what we're saying is that these gifts are life, are Nachala, even though they're be giving out during their lifetime. Meaning, in our halacha, we might have thought that what the halacha would be is that kama yovel, the gift has to return to the father and then has to be reapportioned among the brothers, and we're being told that's not true. V'chiten matana min nachalato l'achad me'avadav v'hayta lo'at shnat ha'dror. But if he gives a gift to one of his slaves, that stays his until the yovel, until the year of freedom. V'shavat la'nasi, and then it returns to the nasi. Vishavat, notice the word Vishavat, like our Shabbat, and that's reminiscent of the whole idea that Yovel and that Shemitah, but especially Yovel, are kinds of Shabbatot. So in the Gemara also, for example, when you discuss, when you mention the idea of a Shabbat, when they want to date things, they actually mean a Yovel. So a Shemitah. So here too, Vishavat Lanasi means that come Shemitah, come Yovel, it goes back to the Nasi. So the gift from the Nasi to a slave of his, to a servant of his, is not a permanent gift. It goes back at Yovel. But he can't grab and take from the inheritance of the people of the nation to remove them from their achuzah. It's got to be from his achuzah that he gives to his sons, so that the people aren't scattered from on their family inheritance. So it's not clear what the pasuk is talking about, by which I mean, that it seems to be, there seems to be a big concern here with the nasi not upending or ruining the system of nachala, of keeping the Jewish people in their places. But then presumably, now remember we said that he's starting out with his nachala is the land of Israel, the strip of land of Israel, 42 miles from north to south and an undefined amount wide, that was other than the 42 miles east to west that was going to go to the central area of the Kohanim, the Levim, and the Jewish, and the regular Jewish people within the environs of the Mikdash, what we would call Greater Jerusalem today, but who knows what that's going to be called in that time. So the Nasi starts out with that, and then when he has sons, he has to give them Nachala from within that. So in the first year it won't be such a big deal, but if that continues on for many generations, it might get diluted. So that the Haftarah doesn't deal with, but the Haftarah's main concern seems to be saying, and that was, this was the reason for giving him that strip, those strips of land anyway, or in the first case, was the worry that he would take from the people. Now, I mention this here because this is the last pasuk of Parshat HaChodesh, and so I'm struck by if you said, why do you read this Haftarah on Parashat Chodesh, the easiest answer would have been because it discusses the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash being on Barishon Be'echad B'chodesh, on the first of Nisan. But I would point out now that it starts though with Kol Ha'ama'aretz Yu'ala Terumah Hazot, that everybody should be in the truma, in the giving, in the donating, lanasi b'Yisrael, to the nasi of the land, of those strips of land will come out of land that really belongs to the entire Jewish people, and they'll all be part of that truma. It's also talking about certain korbanot that they would donate to, meaning that that the nasi would have to give the korbanot for Shabbatot and Moadim and things like that, and the rest of the people would join him in that truma, and then we finish with again back at the nasi. So if you asked me what the focus of the Haftarah was in terms of themes, I would have said the Nasi is certainly very prominent, and the Nasi and his rights or lack of them, or the things that he has the ability to do or not do, I would have said that's a significant theme in terms of this Nasi. So why is it that we read that on Parashat Chodesh? So here I would mention that Parashat Chodesh is read before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and while we all know Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of the month of Nisan, which is the month of Gula and things like that, it's also Rosh Hashanah LaMelachim. It's also the beginning of the new year for kings, and in that new year for kings, though, so there's various discussion about what that means. It's a new year for kings, how it works that it's a new year for kings. So however it works, it seems like if a king came into office towards the end of a calendar year, that come in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, at the end of a Nisan year, meaning he comes into office in Adar or in Shvat, that come the next Nisan, we would count him as having been in office for 2 years already. That's what it seems to be. That's what it seems to mean, or that's what it seems to. That's what we mean by the fact that it's a Rosh Chodesh for Melachim. If that's what it means, then reading these Haftarah and Parashat Chodesh could equally be about, not so much about the Beit HaMikdash or about Geula, but equally be about reminding ourselves of what government is supposed to be like and supposed to be about, and the Jewish people, and the Nasi is, and I'm following Radak here with apologetically, I'm sorry, I value Rashi's prayers, but here I think Radak seems to work much more simply and much more comfortably, and I think it would be saying to us that before the king's time returns, before the Nasi's year rejuvenates itself and is renewed, you have to remind yourself about the proper way to be a Nasi in the Jewish people, to be a ruler of the Jewish people. And that proper way, I think we're being told, has certain limits to it. First, it's that Nasi is very involved with the Beit HaMikdash, more so than the rest of the people. So if we're going to talk about it, if we're already comfortable saying the people won't show up at the Beit HaMikdash all that often, why would it be the Nasi shows up more often? So that would suggest something along the lines of that in running a people, in being the leader of a people, there you need much more regular and consistent consultation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the direct presence of Hashem in the world, and that's why you would come in. That might also explain why it's the Nasi who provides the regular korbanot, right? While the people provide the regular korbanot, that's the everyday runnings of the thing, when the people are coming to the Beit HaMikdash, that's what I meant to say, when the people are coming to the Beit HaMikdash, and they're going to experience it most fully, that's when the Nasi steps in and offers it, and is the one who finances that part of it. And the point of financing that part of it on his part is that it's his leadership that reminds the people that they need to always be involved, continually involved, with the Beit HaMikdash and with Avodat Hashem and all of those types of ideas and ideals. So that's the role, that's in the role of the Nasi, that he has to do that. So within that context of having to pay so much and be so involved in the financing of various things, that's where you have a worry about how kings finance their programs. So one aspect of it is that we make sure that the king has ample resources from within which to finance, as we've said, to finance all of these Beit HaMikdash issues. But then we have to also remind him that it's not his right to do anything other than build off of those sources of financing. It's not that the Nasi has unbridled power and unlimited rights over the people and over the people's property. He, in fact, does not, and that's what he's being reminded of again and again, and that his property is his and theirs is theirs, and he has to always keep that in mind. So these seem to be central themes of this Haftarah and that are brought out in the rest of this Perek. That's what the focus is. That come Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it's the time to rethink that. This would suggest it's time to rethink from these chapters in Yeshayahu. Yesterday, the previous day's chapter Memhei, and this chapter Memvav are giving us a little handbook and a little reminder of the role of central government in the future, and that role balances involvement with the Beit HaMikdash of a greater level than that of the regular people, because the Nasi, by virtue of his greater power, also needs greater involvement. And then talks a little bit about the financial responsibility of the Nasi and where he legitimately can take that financing from. Pasuk Yutet, Vayevini b'mavo ashal ketav ashar el ha-lishachot ha-kod el ha-lishachot ha-kodesh el ha-kohanim ha-ponot tzafona v'nei sham makom v'yarchatayim yamas. Then he brings me into the passage that's at the side of the gate to the places where the Kohanim, their offices, the little lishachot that turn to the north, and there's a place there in the west where there is an open space. This is where they're going to cook Kodesh Kodeshim, the Hashams, and the Chatat, which they can't take out into the Chatzer HaChitzona to the Kadesh Am, being a term that we've seen before in terms of bringing it out to a place where the regular Am is, because that might lead to Tumah, it might lead to being going out where it's not supposed to. So the Radak struggles here with Chatzer HaChitzona, whether it means the regular Azara. So if it means the regular Azara, that's a problem, because Kodesh HaKodashim were allowed to go out there, the Kohanim could eat out there. So the Radak says it's similar to them not wearing their Big Day Kahuna out there, even though they theoretically could. You don't take it out there because you're worried about what will happen with the Big Day Kahuna if you take it out there among the regular people. Here too, maybe you'll be worried about that. You'll be worried that you'll take it out somewhere where you're not allowed to take out, or you'll come into contact with somebody you're not supposed to come in contact with, and then it'll become pasul. And therefore, they'll add a level of care about these Kodesh HaKodashim. Even though they could be eaten in the Azara, they won't. They'll eat them only in a place where the regular Israelim can't go. Pasuk Chav Alam Vayotzi'ini L'chatzer HaChitzona. And here, the Radak thinks it's the Ezrat Nashim. It's really the outer courtyard where all Jews were allowed to go. Vayavirini L'arba'at Miktzoei HaChatzer. And he showed me the four corners of the Chatzer. So this is true, this was true of Bayachini, that every in the outer courtyard there were four offices on each corner. There was one office in each corner, one room on each corner where they did various things. They were 40 long and 30 wide, and they were all the same size. So they were square, they were rectangles, but of equal size in each corner. And you there, Vitur Saviv Bahem Saviv Larbaatam. And there is a row of masonry, is what the JPS says. Right? There's a tour, there's a kala row of running all around it. And it has ovens, it has places to cook under this tier, under these tirot, under these rows all around. So in the inner place, you had a place for the Kohanim to cook their Kodesh HaKodashim, and in the outer place, you have a place for them to cook the korbanot for the regular people, the shlamim, the korbanot that everybody was allowed to have together, that everybody ate from. So those they could cook on the outside, and that's what he was showing him there, the outer spots for cooking these various korbanot. So that in this last piece of the chapter, it seems like he has so far already been showed the Nasi and his relationship to the Mikdash and things like that. Here he's being showed, he's having demonstrated to him the places where the cooking, the places where the making sure that the food is properly taken care of happen. And that's the end of this parak, the end of this part of the vision. So in the two chapters that are left, we will finish up with the Beit HaMikdash, and in chapter 47 we will go out from the Beit HaMikdash and begin to expand our vision, or Yechezkel will begin to expand his vision outwards to other parts of Eretz Yisrael at this time, and that will bring us to the conclusion of the Sefer. Have a great day.